with half a megaton of hydrogen bombs, but they have to wait until the president's there. There can't be any other explanation for what they're doing. Knock out the satellites to slow our communications links to a crawl, then wait for the president to show up in San Francisco and blow the city off the map. Maybe the explosions will be enough to trigger an earthquake in the bargain. Jamil looked up at the two generals and the others clustered around Scheib's chair. They looked grim, he realized. Something must have gone wrong. The woman from the National Security Office looked up and met his gaze. She detached herself from the crowd around Scheib and walked down the length of the table toward him. Jamil got to his feet, and before she could say a word, he urged, "You've got to get a warning out to San Francisco. You can't let them fire those missiles without warning the Homeland Security people." Coggan stared at him for a long, silent moment. Then she drew in a breath before replying, "Are you really that sure that San Francisco is the target?" "Yes." She looked away, murmuring, "The city would go apeshit if we told them they're going to be bombed. Mass panic. God knows how many people would be killed in the rush to get away." "They'll all be killed if we don't warn them," Jamil said. Then he added, "And the president, too." Coggins shook her head. "I don't know. I just don't know." "Tell your boss at least," Jamil said. "Let him make the decision. He's the National Security Advisor, isn't he? Let him earn his keep." She smiled thinly. "When in doubt, bucket upstairs." Santa Monica Airport. The flight operations director put down his phone and made a weak smile for Sylvia, who still stood unmoving before his desk. "Okay," he said shakily. "I've got a plane to take you to SFO.
"San Francisco?" Sylvia asked.
Nodding, the operations director got up from behind his desk. "It's a private plane. A friend of mine is flying up there on business, and he's agreed to take you and your daughters."
"That's wonderful."
Mopping his brow with a damp handkerchief, the operations director said, "I had to call in a lot of favors for this. I hope you tell Congresswoman McClintock about it."
"I certainly will," said Sylvia.
The operations director glanced at his wristwatch as he said, "You go over to the General Aviation Terminal. There's a bus outside that'll take you there. Be quick now. He said he'll wait for you, but he wants to take off no later than 4 p.m. Sylvia grabbed her roll-on's handle.
"We'll be there. Tell him we're on our way, and thanks."
The three women hurried out of the office so fast the operations director didn't have time to pull one of his cards from his wallet and give it to Sylvia so that she could show it to Congresswoman McClintock. Air Force One. The president looked up from the text of the speech he would give at the Cow Palace as his chief of staff came into the private compartment and sat in the big comfortable chair facing him. Leaning toward the president, Norman Foster said, "The pilot says we're on the approach to San Francisco." The president glanced at his wristwatch. "Right on schedule. Good." "We can still turn around," Foster said. The president gave him the stare that often froze lesser men. Foster gazed back at his boss without flinching. "They're still worried about the city being nuked?" "Took a call direct from your national security advisor. The admiral thinks the prudent thing to do would be to turn back. I'd look like a damn fool if nothing happens. You'd be dead if they nuked the city. Me too." With an easy smile, the president said, "I'm going through with this. I can't afford to look like a coward. I'd never live it down."